welcome back to Bingeable.
Hello.
So today we are talking about Watchmen, which came out last year, but it was just nominated for 26 Emmys. And I was truly blown away, mind blown by this show in so many ways.
I mean, I feel like I have to say, so we also listened to the official Watchmen podcast, not to be confused with the Bingeables podcast, but in the podcast, they described it, which I thought was the perfect analogy, especially because I wasn't even done when I had started listening to the podcast, in that it's like, it's just so many twists and turns. Like, it's like a crossword puzzle in that you are just like, okay, I just need to get like one word and then I will like feel like I'm doing okay. And then at the end, it was absolutely incredible and you find out everything. You were mind blown. I was like mind fucked.
Yeah, so they basically throw all of these balls into the air and no seeming connection between some of them. Yeah. And by the end, it just all unravels. And by episode 9, everything comes together. And it's, you're like, holy shit, I cannot believe the way all of these different storylines connect. It's like writing at its absolute finest.
And it's by the same creator as Lost and The Leftovers, which I feel like makes a ton of sense. Especially, I didn't watch The Leftovers, but I watched Lost, and this makes a lot of sense for me.
Yeah, it really speaks to the idea of, like, treating the audience as smart people, which I think a lot of shows don't. A lot of shows just kind of assume that the audience is dumb and sort of write to that. And this is completely the opposite, where you're sort of always having to reach for, well, what does that mean? And how does that connect? And it's a really like engaging way, I think, to watch a show.
What I also think it just helps like more you, I mean, it just leads to more conversation outside of the show and more research and more, like, you get more involved in the show because you're genuinely like an investigator watching the show. Like, you are so curious about, so you want to know the other Easter eggs that other people are picking up, or like the other ideas that people are having. Like, you, it kind of makes it like a game for you.
Yeah. The original graphic novel and the movie that came out have nothing to do with white supremacy and race in America, and that is a huge, huge, huge part of the show, which is just obviously unbelievably timely. I mean, it would be in any time, but especially now, it's just sort of crazy to think that it's so revealing about what's going on in the country now. And the first episode opens with the Tulsa Massacre, which is something that I feel like the majority of American people, especially white people,
learned about recently. Well, and I also think it was just, obviously this show was created before quarantine, and it was created before all the protests began during quarantine, and before we all really got involved in Black Lives Matter and started to understand more of the horror that was going on in our country. But like, there were so many things that were mentioned in the show that I feel like I was learning about just a few months ago in quarantine when all of this was happening, that then it was in the show, but obviously the show was created before this. Like, it was such a weird reflection of what's happening, but it's also just relevant no matter when you watch it, obviously.
Right.
But it was like almost bizarre to watch this show that I feel like in some ways like predicted conversations we would be having over the few months after it aired.
Yeah, I mean, it's really incredible that you can take material that already exists that doesn't inherently have anything to do with race in America and reorient it in a way that, to me, having not read the graphic novel or seen the movie, I can't like take the two apart. Like, it's so much a part of everything about the show that it's like I can't even separate them, which I'm sure is interesting for people who already had a connection to the material.
Yeah. And once again, Lucy and I did not read before we watched the show, which is the theme of this podcast. Didn't read the book. Here we are. Didn't read the comic.
Newbies to the material.
Also, it speaks to, A, like, the show itself in order to get people hooked on a show that they don't really know what's going on in, you have to have incredible performances. So the acting was fantastic, but also, like, I just wanted to watch Watchmen because Regina King was attached, and I'm obsessed with her, and I feel like she had just won the Academy Award for If Beale Street Could Talk, and it was kind of like she's definitely having a full-on, well-deserved, needed moment, and so I feel like that is what hooked me onto the show, not knowing anything about what it was about or that even a graphic novel about it existed before watching it.
One of the things that I think is really amazing about it is that even though it's taking place in this alternate version of America, it's very much a reflection of where the country is. And Damon Lindelof is white. And thank God the writer's room was not just a group of white men. It was 75% black. He knew that in order to create a show that's authentically talking about these things, you have to be surrounded by people who have actually experienced it, especially when we're talking about generational trauma, which I feel like is a huge part of the show.
And I feel like that's such a huge mistake that creators and writers make all the time. Like, he needed to check himself and make sure that he had people who actually lived it and survived it.
Right.
Which I also think is such a part of the show because these characters are living it and surviving it and understanding it.
Yeah. There's so many threads in the show, but one, like I said, big one is this idea of generational trauma. And Angela, who is sort of like the hub of all of these different storylines, and she's kind of like the heart of the show, is really the whole show, I feel like, going on this journey of figuring out who she is and where she came from and why she makes the choices that she does. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with what we learn about in episode 6, which is one of the most phenomenal, beautiful hours of TV I've ever seen. And she finds out that her grandfather was alive, was a kid during the Tulsa massacre. She finds this out with this, like, incredibly creative choice of, like,
taking these the
nostalgia pills. And so we're seeing, like, the personification of generational trauma as we see her kind of, like, going through the trauma of her grandfather and what he went through and how that has trickled into her own life.
Well, and it was like a movie within a show. It was so beautifully, it was shot in black and white, and it's kind of like this whole superhero film in its own right, because you find out that her grandfather was Hooded Justice, which is such an incredible story on its own. So it was it was also like the most entertaining. So it was, I've seen nothing like it on TV before.
And to see this imagery of a black man
as a superhero
is just amazing to see. It was just such a beautifully done episode. Talking about generational trauma, the episode where Looking Glass,
yes,
where we see his origin story.
And even when he's in the support group and the man comes in and he's talking about how when you go through trauma, it's not just you that's going to go through it. It's like every generation, without realizing it, is born with this trauma somewhere inside them. And so then that related back to Regina King. I think it was the episode right before, because then Regina King literally gets to go through the trauma within her that she didn't even know was there, but that clearly led to everything that happened in her life going forward.
Yeah. And I also think Angela's choice to be this kind of like underground Sister Night cop alter ego, and he kind of has this like Looking Glass alter ego, really brings in the idea of like masking your face, which is another huge part of the show.
Which, again, unbelievable timing of the show that we are now all wearing masks and watching a show about masks for very different reasons. They're all wearing surgical yellow masks if you haven't seen the show. And just now you're like, wow, who knew that this was literally going to be our exact future?
Who knew? But it is sort of true that, like, I think it's interesting to see how people act when they feel like there's no consequences because people don't know who you are. It's kind of like all of these internet trolls, you know?
It's just like a type of shield. And you kind of, you can basically get away with anything without repercussions. You have this anonymity that is your shield, basically.
Yeah. And Senator Keene is another, he's not physically wearing a mask, but like he is obviously, and same with Judd.
And Jane.
Yeah. They're all kind of like masking who they really are.
And it's insane how, so Judd is the police chief and he is killed in episode one. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it. And he is extraordinarily close with Regina King and her husband Cal, and him and his wife Jane. They're like family. And then basically you come to find out that this man who has been, you know, protecting Regina King and working with her, and you think that they are extraordinarily close, has a KKK robe in the back of his closet and was actually part of the 7th Cavalry.
Which I did not see coming at all, did you?
No.
Like, did you think that maybe he was, like, not a good guy?
Well, I was super confused because I knew Don Johnson was in it, and I was, like, super confused that he got killed in the first episode because I feel like I was like, no, this guy is, like, way too big. So I knew there was going to be a story there, and then I assumed that the grandfather was good because I just, like, immediately warmed up to him. And so, I don't know. I had some suspicions, but right when he was doing the cocaine, I didn't trust him.
I feel like when we typically watch a show, you know the format, beginning, middle, and end, very kind of like standard. But when the content of the story and the form of how that story is being told are like in conversation with each other, it obviously makes for like way more interesting TV or whatever it is. And I feel like this show just exemplified that because in the plot, they're like playing around with time, and in the way that's being told is jumping through time, jumping through planets, like different people's perspectives, and you obviously don't understand all of how that's happening until Cal
reveals himself.
Sort of is revealed to be Dr. Manhattan, and in episode 9, he's basically explaining to Angela that, which was one of my favorite episodes, that he experiences time like all at once. It's not linear.
Yeah.
And in that episode, I feel like we got to see like him having a conversation with her in the bar when they're meeting, but then we're getting flashes to like conversations we've already seen because like to him, they're happening all at the same time.
Well, and it also mirrors the form because the whole time we're experiencing all these different things simultaneously that are not necessarily all connected or that are necessarily actually at different times. We're trying to figure out Adrian Veidt, like where the hell he is in the universe or what's going on with him. I feel like time is just flying by where he is. And everyone is figuring out their histories and their heritages, which also plays with time, like especially with the nostalgia pills. Like the whole show, we were experiencing time almost like Dr. Manhattan by just experiencing everything all at once. All of our answers got revealed all at once.
It's just such a creative way of having us experience kind of what they're talking about.
Well, I always talk about why I love subtitle shows because I feel like I just immerse myself so much more in it because I have to like read it and I can't do anything else. And that's essentially exactly what happened to me with this show because you're constantly trying to figure out like a new puzzle piece. Like I feel like I was trying to do a puzzle with like no frame or end pieces at all. It's just me trying to put these things together in a big clump. But it made me so much more immersed in the show. And so I even put subtitles on because I was like, I need all the focus I can get.
Yeah, it's definitely not a show you can be like texting and then you look up and you're like, wait, I'm on a different planet, like what did I miss? Like you literally gotta be like fully engaged.
Literally and figuratively a different planet.
What did you think about Lady True? I like go back and forth.
So I thought Lady True's like whole story was fascinating. So she her being Adrian Veidt's daughter was a shock. Didn't see that coming. Her daughter being her mother, didn't see that. Also, another example, we're playing with time, we're playing with generation, we're playing with nature and nurture. And so I just thought she was a fascinating character. She, I thought, was one of the most entertaining characters. She, like, really let me down in the end.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, that's the thing that's confusing about her is, like, she obviously wanted power in a way that's, like, not healthy. She had good motives, but, like, does that mean, like, if somebody wants, and I think Adrian Veidt says this, but, like, if somebody wants power that much, like, is it ever really pure?
I mean, I feel like I always say this, like, my first problem with the president is always that they want to be president. Like, who wants that job?
Yeah.
Like, it's an insane, and I feel like that's the exact same thing with, like, if you want to be a god, or if you need to be a god, you probably shouldn't be a god. Because you
for
just
sure.
weren't born. It's not your legacy. You, keyword, you weren't born into it. And I do, and I mean, she did take down the 7th Cavalry, so she does. And I feel
she gets some points for that.
Yes. And I feel a little bad that, like, I give Lady True such a bad rap in my understanding of her. Because I really, it's just essentially her or Dr. Manhattan, who I'm choosing between, and I just love Cal's character. So I'm like, of course I want Cal to persevere. But I'm like, really, I barely know anything about this Dr. Manhattan. Maybe Lady True should be the god.
But then I love the fact that in the end, the person who may or may not, depending on how you think of the ending, but could be the, like, heir apparent of this god is a black woman who, like, doesn't necessarily want this power, but she's the one who then, like, maybe becomes a god. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Black women should be the ones to be, like, the gods. Like,
and
yes.
One of the reasons why they took this angle with Watchmen was because in the original Watchmen, it was very underrepresentative of women and very underrepresentative of black people. And so they specifically, that's one of the reasons why they took the race angle and made the star a black woman.
Yeah. And really, like, began the show and ended the show. And of course, throughout the show, but there's so much happening throughout the show. But really, like, the beginning of the show and the end of the show is about healing. And the show opens with this horrendous, horrendous massacre and ends with what I thought was, like, I could cry thinking about it, one of the most beautiful, beautiful lines written after Cal / Dr. Manhattan is no more and Lady True is dead and these, like, members of the 7th Cavalry are dead, and Will, Angela's grandpa, is talking to her and he says, "You can't just wear a mask, wounds need air." And just that line, like, wounds need air to heal, is so beautiful. And I feel like that's what Angela, like, was looking for throughout the entire show. Yeah.
And that's what Will was going through his entire journey, was when Will was Hooded Justice, he was literally painting his face white under his mask so that he didn't get caught. But he was acting like the first vigilante, but really his wife, poor June, was saying, "You are just doing all this out of anger. Like, you're no longer doing it out of justice." And that was basically because he could, because he was masked and because he was hiding his wounds and not dealing with his pain. And it kind of blew up his life, obviously.
Yeah. I also, one of my, like, that moment gave me chills, and another moment that, like, gave me the chills, because I love this type of thing again where, like, everything comes together and everything, like, makes sense. When Angela and Cal / Dr. Manhattan, this is, like, after he's revealed to be Dr. Manhattan, are talking, and he's explained to her that he's, like, having all of these experiences at one time, and she's, like, ask Will Reeves how he knew that Judd was in the 7th Cavalry.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Manhattan says he doesn't know who that is, but now he does. And you realize that Angela like, somehow, like, planted the seed.
Oh, my God.
It's, like, blew my mind. I was like, holy shit.
That was probably the best, I think, my favorite part of the whole show. And just, like, and then you really started to process, like, how much time was so confusing in this show, but also worked perfectly for the plot. Like,
how crazy was it when we, like, found out that Cal was Dr. Manhattan? Cal is so hot, by the way.
Oh,
he's so dreamy.
He is so such a great husband, such a great father, just like man of your dreams. And then you find out that he's Dr. Manhattan.
And she, like, hacks away at his head, and then she's like, we got fucking problems. I was like, oh, my God. Like, it's such a crazy twist.
So I honestly hate myself because I read that spoiler. Accidentally.
No.
Well, because what happened was Lucy
will... kill you right now.
So Lucy, I will tell you that I was so confused watching the show. Not understanding it. So I read this Slate article that was basically Watchmen for Dummies. I was so stupid. I read it, I guess, like, before the 6th episode, maybe. And it was
I can't believe
after
you're telling
the
me this live.
Episode.
Is this going to be the end of our friendship? I'm freaking out.
It was
I'm
after
so
the
sad.
8th episode. Ugh. And that this... You were supposed to read this article, and I, unfortunately, read it after the 6th episode. And so I basically, like, the first question was, so, like, can you believe that Cal was Dr. Manhattan? And I barely even knew who Dr. Manhattan was at this point. I was so confused. But then, like, I started to learn more about Dr. Manhattan, and I was like, oh, I just really screwed myself over with this reveal. Especially because I was, like, so in love with Cal, and I was texting you how much I was in love with Cal and how hot he was and how...
I could kill you. It's fine. We'll move on. We'll make it through this moment.
I'm so sorry.
Don't apologize to me. Apologize to Damon Lindelof. Anyways, it's so culturally relevant, and it's one of those things where, like, it makes you question all of these, like, tropes that we've just accepted to be true, that, like, superheroes are white, and, like, all of these things that we just, like, literally mean nothing.
Like, just the fact that Hooded Justice specifically, that they made him a black man, it makes extra, like, the story they were able to tell with that, just because of his costume, just because of the backstory, it was absolutely incredible. And it is so insane that we're just pre-programmed to think of superheroes in this way. And that showcases an incredible problem in our society that, again, I also feel like these aren't conversations we were even having as much until as of late.
If you just think creatively and you think outside the box of who this character could be or what their backstory is, you open the door to so many more possibilities when you consider the fact that they might not need to be white. You know, and the person who has the godlike powers can be a black woman. And what does that mean? And what's that story? Like, it just opens up a world so far beyond the limited view of storytelling and stories that we have now. And it just, like, shatters that illusion.
And also, if you have Regina King fronting it, anything is possible because she's perfect.
Do you think she has Dr. Manhattan's powers?
I kind of believe that she definitely has the power because I feel like it all has to do with the eggs. And one scene in the very beginning of the show, she comes in to talk to Topher and he's, like, levitating all of his toys.
Yes.
And so I feel like Dr. Manhattan probably fed him some of his powers, which leads me to believe that, like, now Regina King has all of the powers.
Yeah. I liked that we don't know, but I agree. I think she does.
Well, and she doesn't want, like, she didn't necessarily want to be.
Right.
And I think that's why it's important that she has the power. Like, she doesn't want this god-like control over everyone, I think.
Yeah. I think you're right. I agree. There's so much to it in terms of race and the country and trauma and masks, and I think it's just really important to watch.
Especially watching it now. It was a mind fuck, as I said earlier.
Oh, yeah.
So what are we watching next?
Well, I've been watching Ted Lasso on Apple.
I heard about that with Jason Sudeikis.
Yes, and it is, like, the most earnest show. It's very wholesome. It's, like, it's just, like, a yeah. cute, nice watch.
I do think it's important to have, like, a crazy show and then, like, a calm show.
Totally. What are you watching?
I have just started Emily in Paris, my memoir. It mm-hmm. is exactly like what you were just describing. It is, like, a delightful show to watch during an insane time. And it's Darren Star. Just love everything he does for a nice escape.
Well, we will be back soon.
Yes.
We have a fun, spooky October episode.
I can't wait. I cannot wait.
So excited. So we'll see you guys soon.